Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2015, number 9. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by our good friends at the Remington Trophy. Of course, this year's Remington Trophy presentation. Actually, it's the 2016 Remington Trophy presentation coming up on January 16th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Just go online to get your tickets at remingtontrophy.com. We are recording on location this week in the heart of Benson, Nebraska, at the Benson Brewery, a proud supporter of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast at 61st and Maple in Benson. And, well, we've already had some beer, we've had some food, and now we're getting ready to talk football. I'm Travis Justice, joined by former Husker All-American Dr. Rob Zadiskin. Doc, we could sit here and talk about Southern Miss, but that's not really a game worth talking about because Nebraska's going to win that game. Let's talk about the Miami game because people are still fuming over this thing. Well, it was really two school thoughts. You had, and it was fun to watch Twitter, it was fun to watch Facebook, but you had two different groups it really seemed like. The one that really liked the way the team fought back in the fourth quarter, even though the team lost, but then you had a bunch of finger-pointing going on as well, questioning coaching decisions from the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, to even Mike Riley. Where do you fall after watching that?
You know, I'm kind of more in that former group, and I'm not sure I really look at it as a bunch of finger-pointing. I think there were stuff that could be changed. I really kind of question a little bit the fact that they've stuck with Daniel Davey this long thus far. Going into this game, that was kind of one thing people had pointed at, that he had given up a lot of big plays against BYU. He had given up a bunch of yardage against South Alabama. And you looked at this game and you knew Kaya was going to go right at him. You knew the Miami coaches were going to attack him. And they did right off the bat, first quarter. And it was literally one of those situations where you blinked. Miami had a 17-0 lead. The first quarter was over with, and Nebraska was absolutely reeling at that point. Now, I said I'm in that former group, and I am. I'm really happy with what they did. They pulled Davey. God bless him. You know, you got a hardworking kid. He's a senior. He's a very good athlete. He's just not a great cover guy. I think there's a specific skill set there that he just hasn't really exhibited this season, and it's really cost him badly at this point. You know, you look at what he's done. You look at that Miami game. You had an absolutely superior group of athletes in Miami, and they just scorched him. I think they pulled Davey. They started rotating in a couple of other guys. And all of a sudden, that defense kind of tightened up. They gave up another 16 points in regulation at that point. Not bad, considering the quality of athletes that Nebraska was playing.
Of course, if you are listening to the Husker.com podcast, more than likely you found it on HuskerMax.com. We want to thank HuskerMax for hosting the podcast and getting it out to Husker fans, as I get lots of great feedback as people like to hear Dr. Rob's thoughts each and every week. Now, Dr. Rob, was it a Nebraska comeback that they didn't give up, or did Miami let up? I mean, and that's a big question. Did Miami let up, or did Nebraska not give up, or a combination of both?
You know, there's probably always a bit of that let up. I mean, Miami, they gave up 23 in one quarter. I mean, that takes a little bit of doing to do that. You've got to be a good team to not let people do that. You've got to have that killer instinct. Miami took their foot off the gas. I'm not denying that. But at the same time, I think Nebraska, again, made some adjustments. Now, Nebraska was moving the ball well in the passing game. Rushing game was rough. Miami's got an ungodly fast defense, and they did a great job. They've got some very good athletes up front on the defensive line and at the linebacker spot. They handed it to Nebraska up front on the offensive line. I'm not denying that. That being said, Nebraska passed the ball well. Tommy Armstrong did not have a ton of pressure on him during the course of that game. He seemed to have, in my opinion, adequate time to throw, and he had that game throughout the game. I mean, it was all game long. He had adequate time to throw. He was hurt by penalties, and they were hurt by dropped balls. When Armstrong got the ball off, Nebraska was fine. I mean, they moved the ball in the passing game surprisingly well. And I say that because you look at what Nebraska's done in the past, especially against, in that Miami game last year. Nebraska pounded Miami into the dirt with their running game last year. And in hindsight, you kind of wonder how much of that was Nebraska on the whole and how much of that was purely just Amir Abdullah. But Nebraska rushed the ball very well last year in Lincoln. They could not get a rushing game going. I mean, it was horrendous from a rushing standpoint. But they passed the ball well. They passed the ball consistently well. And Armstrong consistently had time to throw. You remove, I mean, even early in that first half, even in the first quarter, you remove one or two dropped passes, and I think it changes sort of the feel of that first quarter. Miami's still going to put those points up, but I think Nebraska's at least in a position to answer. They had a couple of potential first downs, a couple of potential field position affecting drives that were just completely kiboshed by the fact that that you had some dropped balls.
We are recording live at the Benson Brewery in the heart of Benson at 61st and Maple, so to speak. It's just the place to be, folks. And I'm telling you right now, Tuesdays are the night to be at the Benson Brewery. It is Taco Tuesday, $2 tacos all night long. It's something you're not going to miss. And, of course, great craft beer brewed right here at the Benson Brewery. You know, Alex Lewis got a lot of discussion after the game, A, because of the personal foul penalty, then with his absolute asinine and stupid tweet that he sent out. It was interesting to see the reaction to him, and especially a lot of former players and a lot of apologists saying, listen, it was a dumb tweet, but put yourself in his shoes. I don't care what you do. You have to think twice, speak once, and there's just no excuse for what he did.
Never hit the send button. And this is something that I think is really, you're seeing this more and more often where somebody puts a stupid tweet out there, a bad Facebook post, an idiotic Instagram, alliteration with the letter I there. It's, you know, it's one of those things, no, he shouldn't have sent it. Do I understand his feelings? Yes. But don't go out there thinking you were the only person to have ever had these feelings. You were the only athlete on any team to have ever faced such criticism. And it was. It was a dumb play. I mean, nobody's saying that. Now, here's the thing. If you say absolutely nothing about it, you keep your mouth shut, you'd be apologetic during some post-game interviews, say, yeah, that was on me, it was a boneheaded play, and say absolutely nothing else about it. You put up with half a day's worth of criticism Saturday night through Sunday morning. Guess what? By Monday, nobody cares. The whole thing has completely gone away. Now it's what? Tuesday night moving into Wednesday, and we're still talking about it. And we're still talking about it because you put that tweet out there. There's a time to shut up, and that was a perfect time to shut up. I mean, guys go into these rants and put all their emotions out there. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where I've always been kind of an Alex Lewis fan. His dad was with the Raiders when I was down in Lincoln. His dad would stop by the stadium on occasion when he was in town for workouts to say hi to people. He was great to us when we were down there playing in Lincoln. He'd hang out with guys on the team. He'd give us training tips. I always had a ton of respect for Bill Lewis. I appreciate what Alex has done, transferring from Colorado, coming to Lincoln. That being said, part of being a leader, part of being a team captain means don't lose your cool, stay off social media, and understand the impact that it has. It's, you know, I understand you grew up with this. I didn't. But that also gives me a perspective on it that you don't need to use it. And frankly, Alex Lewis did not use social media. He did not use Twitter. Alex Lewis was used by social media in this setting, and it made him look bad, and he could have completely avoided it by just, say, make a couple of heartfelt apologies for boneheaded play in those post-game interviews, like I said before, and let the whole thing disappear over the weekend. Nobody's ever going to talk about it again.
you know, you look at college football as a whole, and whether it's Nebraska or any other school in the Big Ten, Cardale Jones got himself in trouble last year at Twitter. I know Mike Riley's a nice guy. I know he's a father figure. I know he wants to do the right thing. I think you have to have a team rule that says all social media during the season, we're not talking year-round, social media by every player is shut down. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever, because nothing good can come out of it. Nothing good can come out of it. That you've got too much time on your hands anyway. You got practice, you got school, you don't need to worry about it. Take that out, and if you take it away and you're not looking at it, or at least not posting, it saves something like this from happening.
I don't think you take it away. I disagree. I totally disagree with you. Now, I'm one of those guys where if you had asked me this question 2-3 years ago, I would have said I totally agree. Ban it. It's bullshit. I can't stand it. I don't have a Facebook account. I am on Instagram. I am on Twitter. In thinking about it, though, as I'm listening to you say that, the thought that's going through my head is the fact that you're not going to get rid of it. It's always going to be there. No, we did not have that when I was in school down in Lincoln. But you know what? We didn't even have the internet, for God's sakes. God, I'm getting old. Anyway, you had the print media. I mean, we woke up on Sunday mornings, and the first thing anybody did, you went and grabbed a copy of the Journal Star. You went and grabbed a copy of the World Herald. You went to look up and see what people wrote. You went to look at the photos in the newspapers. You went to see what the beat writer said. You listened to the interviews. That was the thing that you did back then. You didn't have the internet. You didn't have social media. And so you went to print media, and it was something we paid attention to. And the dogma was, now I remember when I went to the New York Giants, you know, Alex Lewis thinks he got heat on Twitter. Go to the pro level. Now, it's not like I was the stud NFL player. I had a very journeyman-like 4.5 years in the NFL. But the first thing you learned about month one was how ungodly guarded you had it in college. And it didn't matter where you were at in college. I went to the NFL, and all of a sudden, you just got absolutely smacked in the face with the harsh reality of national media, of big city media. I mean, unless you're in Green Bay, you've got the media from cities like St. Louis, Dallas, Houston, Nashville, New York, L.A. That's who's covering these games, and they are not friendly. I mean, the harshest thing you're seeing from Nebraska fans and Nebraska media, I mean, that's soft pats on the back by New York standards. And so you learned it. You learned it. What you learned was it wasn't that you couldn't pay attention to it. It's everywhere. The media is always going to be there. That network is always going to be there. Those quotes are always going to be there. The negativity is always going to be there. That criticism is always going to be there. What you've got to do is you've got to learn to use it. You've got to teach the players how to use it. You got to teach the players where things backfire. And my hope is that this is a learning moment, a teaching moment for Alex as well as the rest of the football team. You can't take it away. You've got to learn how to use it. You can't be used by it. You have to learn how to make it work for you.
See, you and I are on completely different pages there, because I think, you know, first and foremost, you represent the University of Nebraska. As a player, I've always said this, and this is the problem with social media. When you are a scholarship athlete and you play for, first of all, you represent the university as a whole, then you represent your team, and then you represent yourself after that. So I think, you know, if you are representing the University of Nebraska or any university of that standpoint, I think it's in a coach's best interest to shut it down if stuff like this doesn't happen.
Okay, Travis, the university tweets, for God's sakes. I get tweets. I don't know who's sending them out, but they're from the University of Nebraska. I get tweets from the university athletic department. I follow Mike Riley and Kevin on Twitter. I mean, I'm getting tweets from these guys. I follow them on Instagram. I usually don't follow the players, because I got to be honest with you, that seems kind of weird, and and I'm not some crazy stalker. But you know what? When the coaches, the university administrators, the university media department, when they are sending out social media posts. You're going to tell the players they can't. Here's the thing. A lot of these players interact with fans in a very constructive manner through social media. I think when you're, well, you're saying it, you're trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and it's a huge baby. I think there's a huge ton of good that can come out of all of this, and I mean social media in general. I don't think you get rid of it. You learn how to use it, and this was an absolute hardcore lesson in how to use it.
Of course, Alex Lewis says he's done playing for the state of Nebraska, and John Schutz calls Harvey Perlman a joke and gets fired from being a PA announcer. But, you know, a harsh lesson in social media, of course. And you heard Dr. Rob talk about his Twitter account. You can follow him at DocTalkSports. Of course, he's already had people say, hey, I'm going to the Benson Brewery. What kind of beer should I drink at the Benson Brewery? And what kind are you drinking tonight, Rob?
You know, I had a Crimson and Clover, which is their Irish Red Ale, earlier. It's delicious, and I found out that I drank the last one. I'm a little disappointed about that, so I switched over to the Fix. It's an amber ale. You and I hate to say this because it makes us sound like a couple of alkies. We killed a growler of this on, like, podcast number 5, I think it was. But it is a great beer. I was a little bit disappointed because I was hoping they still had the Berliner Weiss. It's one of my favorite beers they got here. It's essentially kind of a sour ale. You know what? I think they finished up with it about a week and a half, couple of weeks ago. So I was sadly disappointed that I didn't get one last taste of it.
Of course, the Huskers are going to be at home this Saturday to play Southern Miss. A lot of you guys have been going down to the Memorial Stadium and checking out the Chicago Doghouse Weenie Wagon. I got some bad news. Kelly's not going to be down there this weekend, all right? Kelly Keegan, my good buddy, he's not going to be down there, but don't worry, he'll be back for all the rest of the games. He just wanted me to relay, hey, the Weenie Wagon's not going to be at 9th and P. So don't worry about it. It's okay. You can live without the hot dogs for 1 week, but if you need a good old Chicago hot dog or the Butkus or one of the many specialty dogs and brats they have, make sure to go to the Chicago Doghouse at Midtown Crossing. So the Huskers are home against Southern Miss, a game they're going to win, Rob. But, you know, where do you see Nebraska going from here, from the Miami loss? Do you see this as an 8-win team? Do you see this as a 7-win team? Do you see this as a 9-win team?
That's a good question. You know, I'm probably at this point, I'm looking at them as still kind of, I think the possibility to be an 8 or 9 win team is still out there. You know, my hope is as you grow from this, because I'm sitting here going, for the love of God, they're 2 to 4 plays away from being a 3-0 right now and beating a couple of very decent teams. I mean, BYU was a play or two away from knocking off UCLA. They lost by 1 point. They led for much of the game. I think BYU's not a bad team. I think they're better than people thought they were going into the season. Miami's kind of a – God, they're hard to figure out. After watching that Miami game, I understand why Al Golden's on the hot seat. Last year in Lincoln, it was – We had a 94 national title reunion. I got to be honest with you. I watched little chunks of the game, but it was hard for me to formulate a good opinion on Miami after that game because I watched so little of it. I'm hanging out with guys that I played with. I'm talking to fans. It was just not a great game-watching environment for me. That being said, I was glued to the TV this year. I watched every second of that Miami game. I got to be honest with you. I understand now why Al Golden is on the hot seat. That might be one of the most impressive collection of athletes I've seen on a football team in a long time. Miami, from a pure athletic standpoint, they are bigger, stronger, faster than most teams that I have seen in a long time. They are a very, very, very good team. I was shocked at how athletic they were. And, I mean, when you looked at that team, I mean, the thing that stood out to me, when a Nebraska ball carrier got tackled against Miami, they stopped. They just got stoned. They went down. When a Miami ball carrier got tackled by Nebraska, almost every single play they would carry 1, 2, 3 guys, minimum 2 yards every single time. It kind of blew my mind how good of athletes Nebraska was facing up against. I didn't see that last year, but like I said, I don't think I had a great opportunity to observe last year. Miami is an unbelievable collection of athletes. I think Nebraska did everything they could to hang in there, and I thought it was a hell of an effort to be able to come from 23 down and tie up that game going into the end of the fourth quarter there. I don't think Al Golden's a very good coach anymore. I used to have a lot of respect for the guy. He seemed like a solid guy. You like the guys who put on the white shirt and tie on the sideline. I think he's in over his head, and that's something that a couple of Miami fans told me last year. They thought Al Golden was in over his head. I agree, based upon the quality of athletes that I saw in that game. But on the flip side, that gives me hope. Nebraska came from 23 down against that group of athletes. So my hope is that this kind of strengthens them. I know a lot of people have made the argument. You look at some of these teams that play just an ungodly tough schedule, that play a tough non-conference schedule. They seem like tougher competitors. And I hope Nebraska comes out of this going into the Big Ten season a little bit tougher for this. I hope they go into the Michigan State game, a Wisconsin game against Iowa, toughened up for having had these tough losses, knowing that they played a couple of pretty solid teams and were one or two plays away from beating them.
I think Nebraska's season, it's hard to put a win total on this because the West Division is now, it's all over the place. I mean, Wisconsin's okay. It's not dominating. Iowa's much improved, and if Iowa can learn how to win close games like they did against Pitt, they'll be formidable, and C.J. Beathard's a good quarterback. Right now, the best team in the West, Rob, is Northwestern. Northwestern has beaten Stanford. Northwestern won at Duke. Pat Fitzgerald's had himself a defense. I mean, right now, Northwestern's the best team in the West.
I don't know if anybody would have called this. I mean, going in, I thought, well, you and I both picked Minnesota. We thought it was going to be Minnesota, followed by probably Wisconsin and then Nebraska. And now all of a sudden I'm thinking Northwestern. And then I think Wisconsin's still a little bit of a wild card. I'm not quite sure how to figure them out. And the reason is because they got beat somewhat solidly by, at worst, a pretty darn good Alabama team. But then, I mean, it's Troy, for God's sakes. How do you wrap your head around that football game? So I don't know how to figure out Wisconsin. Wisconsin's going to be the wild card. I think Nebraska and Iowa are kind of a toss-up right now. I think both teams are going to be pretty hard to figure out until you get a couple more games in. You know, that game at Wisconsin's going to be sort of a linchpin, I think, in Iowa's season in regards to how they do in the Big Ten. If they go up to Wisconsin and get smoked, you know what, I think all of a sudden that's going to tell us Iowa's at best a third-place team in the West Division. If they go up there, lose, but compete, then that kind of opens it up a bit. So I think right now you got to put Northwestern number one. I wholeheartedly agree with you, and that was something I did not see happening. I kind of thought Pat Fitzgerald might have sort of worn his shtick out and in Evanston. I mean, I think it's kind of the whole, he had his time. I think he's a very good coach. I think the whole rah-rah thing had probably blown over at this point, and now it was down to brass tacks. And can you actually coach or not? Boy, you look at their non-conference so far. I think the guy is a hell of a coach. And he doesn't have some of these guys that he's had on offense the last few years. But, God, he's playing a hell of a great defense right now. And, I mean, you look at what Stanford did against USC this week, and it's not like he beat a nobody in Stanford. So I think Northwestern right now is the team in the West.
It's going to be a fun season to watch. Of course, the Huskers at home this weekend to play Southern Mississippi. We want to thank the Benson Brewery for their hospitality tonight as we sit out and underneath the lights on the patio. It's still, it's fall, but I tell you what, this is the place to be as they've got great outdoor seating, great indoor seating, great beer, and of course, great food. Also want to thank the Remington Trophy, the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. The Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 16th, 2016 at the Rococo Theater, Lincoln. Dave Dave Remington was just in Aspen, Colorado all week on like a fly fishing trip. That guy lives the life, and he's been taking some great pictures. Make sure to follow Dave on Instagram because he's got unbelievable pictures. He's an unbelievable talent. Of course, he's an unbelievable friend to the Husker Doc Talk podcast. For Dr. Rob Zadisk, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast.